You've heard of Grammarly, and you might think it's a fancy spell check, but people on your team have been using it and loving it for years, because it does way more than you realise. Grammarly is a secure AI writing partner that works seamlessly across apps and websites and can write an instant first draft in a few clicks, not a few hours. When every word your team writes is clear, concise, and on brand, companies can save 19 days per employee per year. Learn what better writing can do for your company at Grammarly.com. Grammarly. Easier said, done.
You know, it can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. Invisible struggles like stress and burnout, caregiving for a loved one, or being misunderstood. But insight, awareness, and empathy will help us better see the issues they're dealing with. And that can make us and our companies healthier, too. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
Intel is the spark for the dreamers who do. They dream of a life with no diseases, of cleaner, greener, more reliable energy, of advancing education by bringing AI everywhere. Intel is the spark to start something new, to know that no dream is too daring when you have the right foundation. It starts with Intel. Learn more at intel.com/starts.
From the heart of where innovation, money, and power collide, in Silicon Valley and beyond, this is Bloomberg Technology with Emily Chang.
Check in San Francisco, and this is Bloomberg Technology. Coming up in the next hour, Pinterest shares soaring after hours, revenue meeting estimates with a forecast for some modest growth in the coming quarter. More on the future of Pinterest in the social and e-commerce landscape under its new CEO in just a moment. Plus, the future of big tech antitrust may be getting closer. Over the next hour, we will explore the American Innovation and Choice Act and how this could be the bill that gets enough bipartisan support to put big tech in its place. And how do you balance innovation and regulation when it comes to crypto? We will ask the former assistant DOJ attorney general where he weighs in on this rapidly evolving debate. All of that in a moment, but first I want to bring in Rohit Kulkarni, MKM Partners Managing Director. So Rohit, is this where we are, that we're expecting such bad news when Pinterest meets expectations and forecasts modest growth, that the shares go bonkers?
I think it's a function of two things. One is obviously the fundamentals, and I think equally important is Elliott's press release. So expectations were low, they were getting lower. Pinterest was trading as if it's going out of business, to be honest, not like a growth company. And now they jump over a very low bar. And I think the most important thing here is third quarter revenue outlook. Facebook is telling us sequential declines. Snap is telling us sequential declines in the revenues. And Pinterest comes along and says, okay, we might grow sequentially. So this is something not what people had expected. And on top of that, Elliott gives you this press release about Pinterest, them being the largest shareholder in Pinterest. So I think a lot of bad news was priced in, and here we are, up 20%.
You, of course, have a big leadership change that's happened at Pinterest. The co-founder and longtime CEO, Ben Silbermann, out. Bill Ready of Google, longtime payments executive, is in. How do you see Pinterest's challenges differing from what's facing Facebook and Snap?
Pinterest has always been a tweener. There is always a debate between, are they a real social media company or are they a company that is just singularly focused on a single person's hobbies, needs, and going down the funnel of what they may want to buy to convert their hobbies and needs into wants and put ads in front of them. So as we go down the funnel, Pinterest is doing what they need to do, putting shopping on the social media platform, putting payments, tagging along some of the bells and whistles along with it. But I think they have been doing it very slowly. If Bill Ready comes in, he has a very complementary skill set. You talked about PayPal, he was at Venmo, Braintree, now you talk about Google Commerce. So he's bringing a very commerce-oriented skill set here, and that's what probably is something to be excited about. And we'll be watching it from the sidelines here.
Now, Pinterest is, of course, it's a much smaller player than, of course, Meta, you know, even Snap and Twitter. But do you see what's happening here as some sort of broader signal about what's happening in the broader economy or with digital ad spend?
Broadly, we are quite certain that digital ad spend is shifting slowly downwards. The pie shrinking. In there, the pie, I think market share is shifting. For example, we think that Google is getting a little bit of extra market share away from some of the social media platforms. As Google is more bottom of funnel and search is doing well, search tends to do better in recessions and tends to do better when advertisers get very, very cautious about spend. That's what is happening. But when Pinterest, it's a very small player, it could just be a play on, okay, what do you think some of the suburban moms are thinking about holiday shopping? That could be they are not completely pessimistic about it. So that's, if you look at engagement on Pinterest, I think that may be the only leading indicator, but it's still too small for us to make a macro call right now.
All right. You do cover Uber and Lyft. We're expecting their earnings out later this week as well. What are you looking for there?
Again, I think in terms of Uber, we prefer Uber versus Lyft, but both companies should have earnings that should probably exceed expectations. I think the biggest kind of question mark, there are two question marks in front of investors. Do higher gas prices weigh on drivers? We think so, yes. And how does that translate into driver incentives? That's been a very big debate. We think that is going to weigh on the stock tomorrow for Uber. And the second question is, with inflation, with consumer discretionary spend, with rising rideshare prices, how does that weigh into the share of wallet for ride sharing? We think that is very resilient. So with that, for that, we give them a check mark, a question mark for driver incentives. But we like Uber heading into earnings tomorrow.
All right. Rohit Kulkarni, MKM Partners, thank you so much for joining us. Of course, we'll be across Uber, Lyft, and many more companies reporting this week.
We compete hard. We compete fairly. We try to be the best.
We have fierce competition at the developer side and the customer side.
We see vigorous competition.
Our business model is advertising, and we face intense competition.
We don't have a dominant share in any market.
We have a policy against using individual seller data to compete with our private label.
I would describe it as a street fight for market share in the smartphone business.
I've been clear that Instagram was a competitor.
It wouldn't surprise me if Alexa sometimes does promote our own products.
Competition drives us to innovate.
History shows that if we don't keep innovating, someone will replace every company here today.
Mark Zuckerberg, Jeff Bezos, Sundar Pichai, and Tim Cook just 2 years ago testifying at a virtual hearing focused on big tech power in 2020. 2 years later, regulators and lawmakers are still considering rules that'll rein in big tech's biggest players in an effort to boost competition and protect consumers. The American Innovation and Choice Online Act would bar major platforms from giving advantages to their own products over those of rivals. This is the legislation proposed by Senators Klobuchar and Grassley last year. Joining me now, David Kirkpatrick, founder and editor-in-chief of Techonomy, as well as Bloomberg's Emily Birnbaum in D.C., who covers big tech antitrust. Emily, let's start with you. Set the stage for us, because there have been so many competing bills, so many competing approaches here, but this one seems to be gaining steam. Talk to us about what Klobuchar and Grassley have proposed and the status of it at this moment.
Yeah, so there was a wide array of tech-related antitrust bills that passed the House Judiciary Committee last year. Since then, the conversation has coalesced around this legislation you're talking about, the American Innovation and Choice Online Act. It would prevent the companies from giving preference to their own products. So, for instance, on Amazon's e-commerce platform, it couldn't privilege its own private label products over products from small businesses that rely on its platform. Right now, you know, there was a huge amount of momentum behind this legislation. There was serious talk that this legislation was going to get a vote this summer, and Chuck Schumer himself had pledged to put it on the floor in the early summer. It didn't happen. Now we have a week till August recess. It's not going to be happening this week, his office has confirmed, and we reported recently that he told a group of donors that it wasn't going to happen. But now people are looking to the fall, potentially in September, this legislation might come to a vote. But that's a very unusual time for bills to be considered ahead of midterm, so it's all up in the air right now.
interesting indeed, David, that big tech, stance on big tech could become, you know, a real issue for voters in the November midterms after so many years of figuring out how to regulate them. What do you make of this particular bill and how it could impact these companies?
First of all, I loved your montage at the beginning of the segment. It was quite amusing. To be honest, I don't think, even though surveys show that most consumers slash voters do feel that tech companies are too powerful, I don't think this kind of issue is anywhere near the top of the agenda for voters in general. So I think legislators do have to be careful as they're taking actions that might seem, based on hearings they've had, et cetera, to be rational ones, that they don't annoy the voters that put them in office. Because the problem with regulating Amazon, Apple, Google, Meta, et cetera, is these services are essentially as present in people's lives as government itself. So you don't want to mess with them lightly. Now, I do think many of the things that were demonstrated in especially the House hearings were egregious. The quote from Bezos, just based on reporting that we've seen elsewhere and some of the evidence at the hearing, is flat wrong. They do preference their own products at Amazon. So some things need to be fixed. But I just worry that we have a sledgehammer here and maybe we need like a very fine tooth nail, you know, a fine nail and a very little hammer.
Emily, what do you make of that? And talk to us about how sentiment towards big tech has changed since 2020. I mean, we're two long years now away from that. A lot has changed and it doesn't look good for tech.
Yeah, sentiment soured on the big tech companies. You know, it started souring in 2016, mostly related to concerns around then Facebook, now Meta. And it's only continued to become more and more politically potent to, you know, put yourself in opposition to the major tech companies, you know, as part of a broader sort of anti-corporate push during the Biden administration and during the Biden presidency. At this point, the major message that's being pushed by the tech companies is this is not what your voters care about. They are running tens of millions of dollars worth of ads. We did a count this week. They've spent $120 million on advertising, essentially trying to convince voters, you know, Congress is trying to meddle in your phone while so many other more important things are going on, you know, inflation and gas prices that affect you. Why are they looking at this? And so it's yet to be seen if that's a winning argument, but it definitely was potent enough that Schumer didn't put the bills up for vote.
Now, David, I want to get your thoughts on this latest action from the FTC suing Meta over its attempt to buy this, you know, fairly small VR company within Unlimited. The FTC is now challenging this, and we've learned that the FTC filed this lawsuit because Lina Khan wanted to do it, even though her staff disagreed. What do you make of this, that it seems the FTC, or at least Lina Khan, is determined not to let Meta grow by acquisition like it did with Instagram and WhatsApp?
Really good question. But before I answer, I just want to make it clear. I don't intend to echo industry talking points about this big bill. I do think the industry has made enormous errors. And there's huge resentment against big tech, big corporate generally, as the other Emily said. But I just think it's very risky to just go after these companies wholesale the way they're doing it. But back to Meta and Within. At the moment, I think that Meta has made so many mistakes and gotten so many people angry that there is going to be support for almost any pushback against that particular company. And to some extent, I think even on the other bill, one of the reasons so many legislators are so willing to go after the entire group of companies is because Meta slash Facebook's crimes are really so vividly obvious that it seems justified to go after quote-unquote big tech. But I think it's going to be very hard for Zuckerberg to get any kind of significant acquisition through with Lina Khan in there. And certainly, maybe he'll even succeed in ultimately achieving this acquisition, but everything is going to encounter pushback. And one other point I just want to make, let's not forget what's happening in Europe with the Digital Markets Act, Digital Services Act, which is very parallel to some of the efforts being made in the U.S. and which is further along legislatively.
Absolutely. Europe is a whole nother hour-long show in itself. Emily, I got to ask you, what are the chances the FTC can stop this latest Meta deal, even though it is smaller scale?
Yeah, I think a lot of experts looking at this particular lawsuit by the FTC are saying this is a very novel theory, because essentially they're not challenging, they're not saying Meta is currently a monopoly in the virtual reality space. It's saying that this acquisition could set the stage for them monopolizing yet another market. This is a sort of untested and a new way of approaching acquisitions. There's a lot of people who are skeptical about how winning this argument could be under current antitrust laws, but it's not even about blocking this particular acquisition. It's more a show of force by Lina Khan's FTC. You know, she said you have to bring cases even if you're not going to win them, because that's how, you change practices within particular industries. And that's how you kind of put fear in companies as they make these kinds of acquisitions.
Well, certainly an interesting step by the FTC, and we'll be watching to see how that one plays out. Bloomberg's Emily Birnbaum, thank you, along with our Techonomy founder and editor-in-chief David Kirkpatrick, so much here to continue to discuss over months and I'm sure years. Meantime, the White House has urged China not to escalate tensions with the U.S. in response to House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's expected visit to Taiwan, signaling that the Biden administration is preparing for Beijing to retaliate. A Pelosi visit would be a landmark move by a U.S. official and raise the risk of a military confrontation, given China's view that Taiwan is part of its territory. The White House detailed possible actions China could take in response to Pelosi's trip, including firing missiles into the Taiwan Strait. Pelosi's office has yet to officially confirm her visit. And coming up, Activision results also out. Where does its deal with Microsoft stand? We'll give you an update on that next. This is Bloomberg.
What if everyone at work were an expert communicator? What if every doc, message, and email they wrote was perfectly clear and concise? Inbox numbers would drop, customer satisfaction scores would rise, and everyone would be more productive. That's where Grammarly comes in. Grammarly is a secure AI writing partner that understands your business and can transform it through better communication. Companies that use Grammarly save an average of 19 days per employee per year. That's because with Grammarly's AI, what used to take a few hours only takes a few clicks. Like generating an instant first draft in your company voice, or tailoring a message to your specific audience and goals. And Grammarly's personalized on-brand writing help is built in everywhere your team works, across 500,000 apps and websites. Plus, it's safe, secure, and already IT approved. Join 70,000 teams who trust Grammarly with their words and their data. Learn more at Grammarly.com. Grammarly, easier said, done.
Do you love Elon Musk? Do you hate Elon Musk? Do you have no idea what to think about Elon Musk? Then we have just the show for you.
He's become even more larger than life.
Buying Twitter doesn't get us closer to Mars.
They are like really close to the edge of like everything falling apart.
Like, oh, Elon, I volunteer, put a chip in my brain.
Each week on this podcast, we'll break down, analyze, and debate the most important stories on Musk and his empire.
It's all one big universe. You just work for Elon Inc.
From Bloomberg Businessweek, this is Elon Inc. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Let's get back to earnings and shares of Activision Blizzard. A touch higher in late trading after the video game maker posted sales that beat expectations but had little to say about its pending deal with Microsoft. Our Ed Ludlow here with the top lines. Let's talk about the numbers first. Yeah. Where are we?
So better than expected revenue, $1.64 billion, very nice. But context, down 15% from a year ago. Earnings, half what they were a year ago. And, you know, it's a weird situation for Activision Blizzard, right, with the pending acquisition. But the reality is that the video games industry is just not as strong right now as it was last year. You know, Call of Duty Vanguard, which came out in the fall, has performed poorly. That's had an impact on the company's finances. And frankly, we're not all at home anymore. I've stopped playing as much video games, as many video games. And some of their competitors, like Halo, for example, have just done better to grab what interest there is.
How much of this has to do with uncertainty surrounding the deal? I mean, this would be the biggest acquisition in the last year, at least. And we don't know if it's going to happen or not.
So I think merger arbitrage specialists that Bloomberg spoken to say the odds of it going through are around 70%. Mm-hmm. Bloomberg Intelligence think it's going to be tough, but it will ultimately go through. And if you look at the stock, you know, it's gained 20% since the deal was announced. It trades at a significant discount to the $95 a share that were offered. But it's a mega deal. And, you know, we always thought there would be regulatory scrutiny. And, you know, investors seem confident. But as we've learned with, well, let's not go there, Twitter and Musk, anything could happen with a deal of this size.
Activision has also been dealing with some cultural issues.
Yes.
There's questions about the future of CEO Bobby Kotick, whether
yes.
he stays on at Microsoft or if this deal is the start of his swan song.
Yeah, and what analysts would point to is that Microsoft went into the deal with their eyes open, mm-hmm. so it seems. You know, that they bought the company or said they would buy the company at a time that was going through. The biggest kind of wild card is one Lina Khan, I think you were just discussing in the last
Absolutely.
Blog, who has this sort of general appetite to look at big tech deals. In the first quarter, the FTC asked both sides for evidence. We thought we'd get responses on Monday as part of earnings, but in the earnings statement, they just said, hey, as is normal, we're pending a deal. Sorry, can't comment, can't give you any more information. Maybe by the fourth quarter is what Bloomberg Intelligence thinks. We'll get some more detail here.
Well, it's interesting to see Lina Khan scrutinizing a much smaller deal between Meta and you know, a small VR company and not to have the same kind of scrutiny of Microsoft and Activision yet.
That we know of yet. Mm-hmm. Again, we're in a pretty preliminary stage and the deal is on track to close in June 2023, which, you know, given the news cycle, seems a very long way away. And don't forget, this isn't just a US story. The CMA in the UK announced early July they're looking at this. This is a global player. Activision has partners in China with NetEase. It's going to get a lot of attention.
All right. A lot at stake. Ed Ludlow, thank you for that update.
I think simply because you've been successful in a few different businesses doesn't somehow mean that you have unnatural market power. It just means you've been successful in a couple different customer experiences.
I look at the opportunity we provide. I look at the skills people are learning through YouTube. You know, I feel it everywhere when I go talk to people. And providing access to information and knowledge, I think will end up being on the right side of history as well.
I don't think big by itself is bad, but competition is good. And every business, in particular, the businesses that are large and have high scale, the unintended consequences of your scale cannot be dealt after the fact. They need to be dealt while you're scaling.
Regulation will have an important role to play here. I think privacy regulation is important. In areas like AI, regulation will be important.
Some thoughts there from my interviews with various big tech CEOs in the last 18 months as big tech regulation is still pending in Washington. Can Congress rein in these major platforms? Well, the American Innovation and Choice Online Act is Congress's first major effort to regulate big tech since the inception of the Internet. And it has bipartisan support. Here's the bill's leading Democratic sponsor, Senator Amy Klobuchar.
At some point, if there's no competition, these companies are allowed to become these monopolistic, dominant providers. And in the case of AT&T, no one wanted to destroy AT&T. They just wanted to make sure that new competitors can develop.
Votes could come before November's midterms, and if it passes, what does it mean for big tech? Really? Let's discuss that and more with the Chamber of Progress founder and CEO, Adam Kovacevich, a longtime former Google executive, and Charlotte Slayman, competition policy director at Public Knowledge, an organization that works to promote freedom of expression and an open internet. So Charlotte, I'll start with you. What's your sense of this bill? Does it go far enough?
Yes, I think it would be a huge step forward. Of course, there is a lot more that we are hoping can happen in the future, but being able to stop the anti-competitive discrimination that these companies are engaging in to prevent small competitors from getting a fair shot would make a huge difference towards promoting competition and making sure that consumers actually have access to the best products.
Adam, would you agree or does this bill go too far?
respectfully disagree. I have great respect for Charlotte, but we disagree on this one. Look, I think this bill is languishing for a pretty simple reason, which is that what it's proposing to do just isn't that popular. If you look at another space, which is drugs right now, in contrast, Congress is on the verge of passing an extremely popular regulatory change over the objections of the pharmaceutical industry, which is allowing Medicare to negotiate drug prices. That's something that voters have been clamoring for decades. It hits their pocketbooks. They've asked senators about it at town hall meetings. Tech regulation isn't like that. I think we see that polls show that the public favors regulation of big tech platforms in general. But this bill does something in particular that's not particularly popular, which is ban big tech from offering vertically integrated services like Google Maps, Amazon Basics. And it's always been clear why smaller companies like Yelp and Spotify and Match would benefit from that law. But I think senators have sort of seen for themselves over the last couple of months that no voters are really marching on Washington to demand big changes to Google search results or Amazon Prime. And that's just the reality.
Charlotte, how do you respond to that?
So I think it may not be yet a household discussion about competition and antitrust, but I think what people notice is that these products are not serving them. They might not know that that is because of a lack of competition, because these gatekeepers don't have to face the new entrepreneurs who sometimes have better ideas, and that's why we're stuck with the same old products. So I think, you know, people are learning, and that's part of the effort of advocacy for this legislation. People are learning what the root cause is and that it's a lack of competition, but I think people are very familiar with the results of that lack of competition because they see it every day in these products that are no longer innovating in the way that we really should see in this space.
Adam, we've seen big tech kind of stepping up its efforts to lobby lawmakers as this bill inches closer. You've got Amazon News Today hiring a top Republican congressional aide on its lobbying side. You have Apple spending more on antitrust lobbying than ever so far this year. And Tim Cook himself personally going to Washington. Just how scared is big tech of this particular bill?
Well, it's not something they love. And I think, again, there's a pretty simple reason, which is that if you look at the number of people in this country who are happy and satisfied with their iPhone, with their Google search results, with Amazon, we're talking about hundreds of millions of people. And I do think there is something about politics that sort of rewards, you know, kind of the vocal activist few over the kind of the happy many. And I think that's one of the dynamics of this debate, that there's a lot of people who are not paying attention to this debate at all, but who I think would be pretty upset if those products change. And so I think in some ways, the companies are kind of in this position, and it's awkward, but they're in this position, of course, they're defending themselves, but they're also defending sort of their happy customers at the same time.
What do you make of that argument, Charlotte, that, you know, supporters of big tech or, you know, regular people maybe actually wouldn't want these things to be happening if they understood what is, to be fair, a very complicated set of issues?
Right. I don't think that's right. I think the reason that the tech companies don't like this legislation is that it's much easier for them if they don't have to face fair competition. Right now, they can rest on their laurels and they can use anti-competitive tools to prevent competition from getting a fair shot against them. And that is a lot easier for them. I understand that. But I think consumers really would be better served by fair competition and by making sure that those alternatives that are out there or in some cases, you know, are unable to get funded, making sure that those alternatives actually get a chance to thrive. I think consumers will really benefit from those new innovations that we would see if there was fair competition in this space.
On that note, I'm curious what you both think of the FTC challenging Meta's attempts to buy this VR company within Unlimited. It sounds like Lina Khan moved forward with this challenge despite her staff recommending against it. Adam, is this, you know, the FTC trying to prevent Facebook/Meta from resting on its laurels and not innovating and trying to innovate by buying instead of building?
Look, I think the case is more rooted in politics than the law. As you said, her staff attorneys recommended against this case. And this is coming on a week, right, where Meta, actually their revenue was down. I think everybody knows that they're facing pretty existential competition from TikTok, right? And so I think one of the things you see in this new case is that the FTC had to draw a very narrow market definition in order to make this argument that Meta was monopolizing. They said, that Meta was monopolizing what they called the market for a VR fitness apps, right? And they did something similar in their VR dedicated fitness apps. They did something similar in their case against Meta over the Instagram and WhatsApp deals. And the judge in that case said that they had failed to prove the market definition. I think in this case, I predict the judge is going to say they drew the market too narrowly. It's a little bit like saying that like Fruit Loops has monopolized, you know, the market for rainbow colored fruity cereal. Well, that's not its own market, right? It competes against Fruity Pebbles and Frosted Flakes and Lucky Charms and bagels and English muffins. And judges know that, right? And so I think this case is I think likely to fall into a similar trap of defining a market too narrowly.
Charlotte, what do you think about this FTC challenge? It certainly has a ring of some skeptics who think maybe the Instagram and WhatsApp deals should never have happened.
So first, I really don't think we should read too much into this idea that the staff were overruled. I worked at the FTC. I know that there are usually many staff involved in an investigation like this. I think it's not at all clear from these unofficial leaks, you know, what the view of the staff was. And there's a lot of staff with their name on this complaint. So I think they stand behind it. And I think it's a strong argument. I'm so glad to see that the FTC is not waiting to see, you know, not letting this one go by as they have so many times before. I imagine, you know, 10 years from now, maybe we'll be so glad that this was the merger where the FTC decided to step in. It is a situation of uncertainty, and part of what I think is really needed to improve antitrust enforcement today is bringing those cases in situations of uncertainty, especially in tech markets. We're not always going to be completely sure. But what economists have seen is that the prior strategy of wait and see and not bringing a case in situations of uncertainty really led to so many more mergers going through than should have. And the economic theory that new competitors were going to come in and compete away those monopoly rents just wasn't right. That's not what happened. It turns out that the costs of inaction are much higher than the costs of action. So I think they're absolutely making the right decision here, and I was glad to see it.
Interesting. Now, there are some potential big concessions that big tech could make. And we have seen some concessions over the last several weeks, potentially to divert the spotlight. But one of those, Adam, is Google potentially offering to spin off its ad business to fend off antitrust scrutiny. How likely is that?
I don't know how likely that is. I think one of the things that this has come up is in this context of this DOJ investigation, supposedly, of Google's ad tech business. One of the things that's interesting to me about that is that the Texas Attorney General already has a lawsuit that is pretty advanced against Google over the same topic. And so it's interesting to me to see that kind of happening in parallel. I don't know what to make in terms of kind of how that will unfold, but we'll see if the DOJ takes that step, given that the Texas AG is prosecuting. Sometimes enforcers say, well, you know, that's an issue that another enforcement agency is already tackling. So we'll, you know, maybe we focus on some other issue in our investigations.
All right. Well, much here to continue to discuss, but thank you both for weighing in. Adam Kovacevic of the Chamber of Progress, as well as Charlotte Slaman, Public Knowledge. Appreciate it. Okay, coming up, the regulation that could be coming to crypto. Megan Del Rahim, a partner at Latham Watkins and a former DOJ Assistant Attorney General, is with us next. This is Bloomberg.
What if everyone at work were an expert communicator? What if every doc, message, and email they wrote was perfectly clear and concise? Inbox numbers would drop, customer satisfaction scores would rise, and everyone would be more productive. That's where Grammarly comes in. Grammarly is a secure AI writing partner that understands your business and can transform it through better communication. Companies that use Grammarly save an average of 19 days per employee per year. That's because with Grammarly's AI, what used to take a few hours only takes a few clicks, like generating an instant first draft in your company voice or tailoring a message to your specific audience and goals. And Grammarly's personalized on-brand writing help is built in everywhere your team works, across 500,000 apps and websites. Plus, it's safe, secure, and already IT approved. Join 70,000 teams who trust Grammarly with their words and their data. Learn more at Grammarly.com. Grammarly, easier said,
Done.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets
and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take and Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Instead of doing this regulation by enforcement, we should be looking at the legislative process.
If you raise money from the public and that public is anticipating, based on your efforts, some profit, that comes into the securities laws.
The laws around determining what a security are is very complex.
I would say with talking to industry groups, I was like, we need to self-regulate or the regulators are coming. And when you look back, there was very little self-regulation.
We want to make sure that we have thoughtful regulatory frameworks so that these industries can survive and thrive.
Let's take a view on another burgeoning tech industry that is primed for more regulation, and that is crypto. I want to bring in Maken Delrahim now, partner at Latham & Watkins and former assistant attorney general for the Justice Department's antitrust division under the Trump administration. He oversaw the review and resolution of hundreds of mergers and acquisitions and played a vital role in building the antitrust division's engagement with its international counterparts. Maken, thank you so much for joining us. I've wanted to interview you for a long time, and I'm so curious what you make of the debate in the crypto universe right now about how to balance innovation and regulation. Obviously, there's been a ton of volatility in this space. There have been bankruptcies, but also a ton of enthusiasm. What's the right balance?
Well, thanks, first of all, for having me on. It's interesting. There's this debate that, you know, whenever you have a foundational technology that could disrupt incumbent players, there's a big debate. And the legislative process is that it's a very slow process because you need a lot of education. You need to educate the policy members, the policy makers, members of Congress and others about exactly what it does and what should they be afraid of to get in there. Of course, I think the less regulation you have, especially at the infancy of a new technology, the greater the innovation that is going to be surrounding that. Of course, if there's abuses, that's when regulation should come in, but not to come in early at the early stages of developing a new foundational technology like blockchain. And so you've seen a lot of changes in the marketplace. Of course, it's largely related to cryptocurrencies rather than the broader space of blockchain that has many applications.
So President Biden's crypto executive order, for example, what's your view on that from an antitrust perspective?
Look, I think one of the very positive things about the executive order, it brings the whole of government. It gets the views of different folks, looks at competition area. The area that I'm very much concerned about is making sure that, you know, regulation is not put in place where you have, you know, static regulation ex ante that puts that puts shackles on the engineers and the business models rather than letting it develop into its full potential. And what I'm hoping is that different aspects of the government. So, of course, there's this very important role for the SEC and the CFTC and those types of agencies that regulate it from an investment standpoint. But there's also an important role for the Departments of Commerce and Department of Justice, particularly the Antitrust Division, to ensure that the regulations will allow maximum competition and provide the greatest incentives for further innovation. This is a technology that I think has infinite potential to really disrupt many areas and provide efficiencies that ultimately benefit consumers, such as lowering transaction costs. Sure.
Now, we've seen firms like FTX take on a lot more of the market, striking deals left and right. Is that something that we should be worried about from an antitrust perspective, or are there other red flags that you see?
Look, this is a market that's just developing. So there's going to be some winners, there's going to be some losers, and it's going to develop. You're probably not old enough, like I am, to remember back in 2000, right at the height of the internet bubble, where you had everything, you know, you plop a name, add a .com to it, and all of a sudden it's a billion-dollar company. Not all of them survived because they didn't have all the essential elements. So I think the industry is going through some changes, and some transactions are very good because it allows for some technologies or some engineers and other talent to be absorbed into something, another entity that could be productive. So I think every transaction needs to be looked at on its own specific facts and its own specific merits. And that's what the antitrust laws do. They don't look at it holistically about, you know, a bunch of acquisitions, whether they're bad or good. We look at the effects of that transaction.
What's your view on the Klobuchar-Grassley bill designed to rein in big tech? Is that the correct framework by which big tech should be regulated?
Look, I think it's a difficult one because there's existing law and there's a number of litigation that is ongoing, both in the United States and abroad, and I won't comment on that. But the legislative process, whenever you are going to impact ahead of time, this is really industrial policy. This is not really antitrust laws that are being proposed. You are making a policy judgment call about certain businesses. There's going to be some harms because you're going to lose some efficiencies when those business practices are precluded. And those are judgment calls that policymakers are making. There's going to be some harm to consumers by some aspects of these bills. And there's, you know, for example, there's another legislation that makes illegal every merger that's worth over $5 billion. That just doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. And some of these bills, they really need to be refined. There needs to be a lot of debate about this. There isn't, I don't think, the requisite amount of proper debate and the implications of all these bills has been had there in Congress yet.
Okay, then what's your view on the state of antitrust enforcement more broadly under the Biden administration?
Look, President Biden came in. He issued an executive order from the White House to the agencies and also to every regulated industry agency. Every executive branch has to look at it for competition purposes. I think that's good. That is fine to look at the competitive effects and impacts of your regulatory actions. What I don't like is that if particular industries are just targeted, I don't think that should be the goal. And I hope that the two antitrust agencies, the enforcement agencies, the Federal Trade Commission and Department of Justice, look at each case, each transaction, each company, and the effects of the conduct that they have, rather than trying to target, you know, you pick your name, big tech, big health, big whatever it might be. Big in a capitalist system is not bad. Big behaving badly is bad, as I've, in a sophomoric way, described once.
So quickly, what's your take on Lina Khan and her latest approach? We've learned about the FTC challenging Meta's attempt to acquire Within Unlimited, a VR company, and obviously she's certainly made it clear she wants to take on big tech. Quickly, do you think that she is going to succeed?
Well, look, I had an old mentor, Jack Valeni, who was the head of the Motion Pictures Association and a colorful guy, and once he told me, Macon, you can tell a man to go to hell. Getting him there is a whole different story. My experience in law enforcement is that you can say, you know, you're going to break up any company you want or any industry. You have to develop the facts, develop the law, and go prove it in court. That's not always very easy to do. I think they have taken a hard look at some cases, but I think as they have found in the past year and a half, actually bringing specific cases and winning them in court is not as easy as saying so. You know why? Because we're a country of laws and there's precedent of the antitrust laws out there. I commend them for pushing the envelope within the boundaries of the law, but I think success is going to be a challenge unless the facts and the laws are there.
That is a metaphor that I will remember. Thank you. Macon Delrahim, a partner at Latham & Watkins, former DOJ Assistant Attorney General. Thank you for weighing in. shareholder hit Elon Musk with a class action lawsuit, effectively joining Twitter's bid to hold him to a $44 billion deal. Investor Luigi Crispo calling out Musk's, quote, lame rationales for reneging on this contract, accusing the billionaire of fabricating excuses to get out of the buyout. He's seeking a court order compelling Musk to consummate that deal. And that does it for this edition of Bloomberg Technology. Coming up tomorrow, we're going to be sitting down with Uber CEO Dara Khosrowshahi. We're going to talk about earnings and his plans to turn Uber into a super app. Is it working? And don't forget to check out our podcast wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Emily Chang in San Francisco. This is Bloomberg.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets
and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take and Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.